Dr. Fred Pasternak came to my office. And he came to my office with a book that he had just completed. It was a book he'd been working on for decades. It wasn't just a book, it was an act of conscience. And that was why he took the time to write it, despite the fact that, as he writes in his preface, "Finally, I wish to express gratitude to my wife Elizabeth for letting me postpone the plans we had made for our retirement." It's a book that I have looked through, but I doubt that I will ever read cover to cover. It's called Inhuman Research: Medical Experiments in German Concentration Camps. In this book, Dr. Pasternak takes various experiments with various diseases and talks about the doctors, whose pictures are chillingly at the back of the book, and what they did to the innocent sick Jews who became their guinea pigs. This has been an area of research for some years. For Dr. Pasternak and others, Dr. Geiderman, also of our congregation, has done work in this area. Part of the thing that makes this so particularly chilling is the notion that these doctors took the highest uses of human reason, science, medicine, and turned them to evil. And it is hard for anybody outside that mindset to understand how again and again they performed experiments, and I use the word in quotes, because some of the experiments were nothing but forays into sadism and torture. Primo Levi, the author of Survival in Auschwitz, in an interview with Philip Roth, said that it was random whether you survived in the camps, but there were a few things that increased your odds. Whether you came in healthy, whether you spoke German, and also, for him at least, whether you had that magic component of curiosity, whether you wondered about things and wanted to find out about things, whether you learned. And that curiosity seems to me part of the core component of what we have always understood as the characteristic of a Jew. That's why the medical tradition is so powerful in Judaism. We point to Rambam as the great example, Maimonides, but he's not the only one. Many great Jewish sages were doctors. And there are records of medieval towns and countries where Jews are a tiny percentage of the population, but they're half of the doctors. Because we had that curiosity. But here's the riddle. What's the difference? What component is in the curiosity of someone who saves lives and the people written about in this book? And while I don't want to suggest that one single quality could be isolated to cover everything, there is one Jewish principle mentioned again and again in different ways in our sources. And that principle is called Kvod HaBriot, which we would translate as human dignity. The idea of human dignity is instantiated, repeated, insisted upon in Jewish sources. Gadol kvod habriot shedoche lo taseh b'torah. So great is human dignity, says the Talmud, that he even overrides prohibitions from the Torah. And if the rabbi says something overrides a prohibition from the Torah, you can imagine that it is a powerful overarching principle. Let me give you some examples. On Pesach, when we take the wine from our cups, that's Kvod HaBriot. The Egyptians were our enemies. We didn't love the Egyptians. We didn't like the Egyptians. We fled from them. But remember what the Midrash says. Remember what God says to the angels. How can you sing when my creatures are drowning? God created them. And so, Kvod HaBriot. This is why I and other rabbis during the war in Lebanon made it a point to say it is no impugning of Israel's right to defend itself, Israel's actions in the war, to say that there are tragedies when innocent civilians die by the actions of a Jewish military. Maybe it had to be. Maybe you can find ultimate responsibility elsewhere, but it doesn't matter. The point is, first you mourn, then you look for who is to blame. Because when God's creations are dying, it's a tragedy. It's Kvod HaBriot. You're not allowed to say, well, they don't really matter because, after all, and go into elaborate political justifications. The death of a human being, even an enemy, as the Midrash tells us, is a diminishment of God's presence in the world. And even though it may be necessary, and even though the Torah may command you to do it, because self-defense is a command of the Torah, still, how can you sing when my creatures are drowning? This year we had the great privilege of having Elie Wiesel as our centennial scholar in residence. At the beginning of his career as a writer, as you all know, back in the late 50s, he published Night, his most famous book. But the most famous passage from that most famous book is usually misunderstood. And it was Elie Wiesel who some 20 years ago cleared it up to me and told me where the passage came from. And it makes it completely different. It's all about Kvod HaBriot in a special way, and here is that passage. You'll recall that two adults and a child are being hung in Auschwitz. The three necks were placed at the same moment within the nooses. Long live liberty, cried the two adults, but the child was silent. Where is God? Where is he? Someone behind me asked. At a sign from the head of the camp, the three chairs tipped over. Total silence throughout the camp. On the horizon, the sun was setting. Bare your heads, yelled the head of the camp. His voice was raucous. We were weeping. Cover your heads. Then the march past began. The two adults were no longer alive. Their tongues hung swollen, blue-tinged. But the third rope was still moving. Being so light, the child was still alive. For more than an hour, he stayed there, struggling between life and death, dying in slow agony under our eyes. And we had to look him full in the face. He was still alive when I passed in front of him, his tongue still red, his eyes not glazed. Behind me, I heard the same man asking, "Where is God now?" And I heard a voice within me answer him, "Where is he?" "Here he is. He's hanging here on this gallows." That night, the soup tasted of corpses. Many years ago, I asked Mr. Wiesel about that passage. And he said something that opened my eyes. He said, "David, it's the Rashi about the man hanging overnight. It's a Rashi every school child who learns Chumash and Rashi sooner or later learns. In Deuteronomy, it says, if you hang a criminal, you may not let his body hang overnight because he is an image of God. And Rashi says that he'll give you a mashal, a parable from the Midrash. Rashi, the great medieval commentator. He said, it's like twins. One of them is a prince, and one of them becomes a thief. And one day in the town square, the thief is hung, and people, when they pass by, think it's the prince because they look so much alike. So, he says, when you see that thief there, you're holding up an image of God, and you can't allow an image of God to hang overnight, so you take it down. Now, understand what went on in Elie Wiesel's mind. If in Rashi's Midrash there is the bad brother and the good brother, the thief and the prince, and the innocent child was being hung, who was being hung? The prince. And in the parable, who is the prince? God. Remember? That's what Rashi says. The reason is because someone's done bad, but they look like someone who is all good. Who's all good? God. Who's done the bad? The human being. But here's an innocent human being being hung. So when he said, that's God up there, it wasn't the blasphemy of a disaffected Jew. It was the fidelity of a learned Jew. He was drawing out of the sources of Judaism the idea of Kvod HaBriot, that human beings can represent God in this world, even in the most dire and terrible circumstances. And it changes from an act of rejection of God to an act of affirmation of God's image in every human being. That is our task, to see God's image in the criminal and in the tzaddik. We saw it here when Wiesel came here and bore witness to a room full of children, to a sanctuary full of children from all over the city, and told them that he travels all over the world to try to bring the message of human dignity to places where people are suffering. But here's the point for today. Kvod HaBriot, as you can see from the book Night, from the drowning Egyptians, is not only for the living. Kvod HaBriot is also for the dead. Many families, when someone passes away at the funeral home, have a viewing. And when they ask me, is it okay to have a viewing, I always tell them no. Jewish tradition does not allow a viewing. And when they say, but it makes me feel better, my answer is, as far as Jewish tradition is concerned, it's not about you. A corpse is called a roev eino nirah. You can see them, but they can't see you. And it is an impairment of their dignity to look on someone when they have no choice. You don't have that right. They can't look back, so you're not supposed to look. That idea of Kvod HaBriot is why this year at Sinai Temple, under the leadership of our cantor, along with Terry Wolberg and Maureen Rosenberg and help from Sinai Temple Mortuary, we started a Chevra Kedisha, and you will find these outside. The Chevra Kedisha is the small group that washes and purifies the body before burial. And by the way, you ask apologies of the body before you do it. Because what you're about to do is necessary and it's ritually mandated, but you also understand that the person before you has no choice. I hope that some of you will choose to join in this ritual of Kvod HaBriot. This is why Judaism does not allow cremation, because this is a vessel that contains holiness, and you're not allowed to destroy it. If the natural processes which God has put into place eventually claim all of our bodies, and they do, there's nothing we can do about that. But to burn a human body deliberately, by choice, it's just not a Jewish thing to do. It doesn't fit with Kvod HaBriot. Our age has a very peculiar relationship to the physical. By making it all important, we actually make it less important than it is. Bodies are everywhere. On every billboard, in every show, in every movie, they're plastered all over like cheap currency. They're stripped and pierced and dressed like cheap goods. But that's not a body in our tradition. In our tradition, a body always has value. Because it is not in a direct, literal, physical way, but in some religious, spiritual way, an image of God. That's why the Talmud tells the story of Hillel leaving his students, and they said, "Where are you going?" And he said, "I'm off to perform a holy act." "What?" they said. And he answered, "I'm going to take a bath." Because the care of the body is a sacred act. That's why this book contains blasphemies. Because of what people did to images of God, to human bodies. And that's why healing is sacred. And that's why tending to the dead is sacred. That's why it is a chesed shel emet, a true kindness. Being a kindness that can never be returned by the person who receives it. When someone dies, we lose a lot. The touch, the smell, the comfort of physical presence, the tactile sensation of another human being. But we also ought to understand what it is that gives it to us. What a human body is. Physicists tell us that every atom inside of us is really the dust of dead stars. On Yom Kippur in the Haftarah, we read, "U'mibsarecha lo tit'alem." We say to God, "Don't hide from your own flesh and blood." We are God's own flesh and blood. We are that stardust, but breathed to life. Let us remember those who moved through the world before us, those who gave us light, Let us honor those who pass through now and treasure who we are and each other with kavod habriot, with human dignity. For we are not only the stuff of stars, we are also the children of God.